What kind of weekend are you in the mood for? Well, with Disney Plus, anything is possible. Whether that be 2 days of twists and turns with Only Murders in the Building, drama and fine dining with The Bear, or a journey back to feudal Japan with Shogun. January weekends just got better with Disney Plus. Tap the banner to learn more. 18 plus subscription required. Learn more at disneyplus.com.
Adobe Express is the quick and easy create anything app. It's a game changer for my business, my go-to for creating content. From social posts to images, videos, flyers, whatever I need to stand out. With customizable templates and smart features, it saved me endless hours. And the best bit, it's free. Search for Adobe Express to find out more and get started today.
Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
And I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
Charlie Harding, we're back, 2025. And yet I still can't stop thinking about my Spotify Wrapped from 2024 because my top artist, it wasn't Sabrina Carpenter. It wasn't Claro. It wasn't Chris Stapleton. It was someone very unexpected, Jeremy Irons.
Jeremy Irons.
You know him, the actor, Brideshead Revisited, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah, he's great.
And here he is.
I never thought hyenas essential. They're crude, but unspeakably plain.
That's him as Scar in the original Lion King soundtrack.
Of course.
The track Be Prepared.
And so you're just a Lion King head, or is this, I'm guessing, Children in the Minivan?
Children in the RAV4, you're absolutely right, Charles. And I am completely Lion King pilled. I know the soundtrack inside and out. I'm proud to have Jeremy Irons as my top artist of 2024.
You're definitely in the 0.0001% of Jeremy Iron listeners last year.
And it's a good time for us Ironheads. That's what I'm coining, by the way, because Disney just released the Lion King prequel, Mufasa, with music by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Is it rude to say I feel like this movie kind of came and went, though? I didn't hear much about it.
Possibly that's because it got lost in the holiday shuffle. Also, maybe this movie didn't deliver on the promise of the original Lion King. Our colleagues at Vulture, in a review of the movie, called it lifeless and bland.
Ooh.
And they were not alone. There was not a lot of love for Mufasa, besides from audiences who sent its box office numbers into the multiple hundreds of millions.
Okay.
And what's more concerning for me and my Spotify playlist, Charlie, is that there doesn't seem to be any hit songs from Mufasa. No earworm that I'll be singing over and over. So I feel like this might be a moment of reckoning for the House of Mouse. And I want to ask, in its push to make bankable sequels, has Disney lost its musical edge? Just 3 years ago, we were here celebrating Lin-Manuel Miranda's soundtrack for Encanto.
Right. He had a number one hit. It was crazy. Genuine earworm.
Now we're potentially eulogizing the most reliable source of crossover musical hits of the last half century. Is this the end of Disney's musical dominance, Charlie? I propose to answer this question, we listen back to what made the original Lion King soundtrack so good.
Yeah.
And then let's compare those classics with the newest songs from Mufasa.
So you're pitting Elton John against Lin-Manuel Miranda, just to be clear.
Yes, but there's also an undercard in this title fight, because in the second half of the episode, yeah, let's take Lin-Manuel Miranda's score for the original Moana and compare it to the sequel, which was released this year, Moana 2.
Okay.
Which, like Mufasa, was maybe not as critically beloved.
Okay, so what classic Lion King song should we start with?
Charlie, there isn't even a choice. I mean, is there a more iconic opening in the annals of music than this? A Zulu chant sung by Soweto-born singer Lebo M. Nansingenya Mabagiti Baba. Behold a lion. Behold the king. What do you think of when you hear that, Charles?
All the animals gathering around the animal kingdom in the savannah, coming together with a monkey named Rafiki climbing a cliff, showing the baby Simba to the kingdom that he will later rule.
And then we hear the magnificent voice of Carmen Twilley. From the day we arrive on the planet, and winking step into the sun, there's more to see than can ever be seen, more to do than can ever.
Okay, I'm confused. I'm looking up the credits here because I feel like I'm not a Lion King family right now. We just haven't gotten into it with our kids yet. And for whatever reason, I feel like with The Circle of Life, am I wrong to remember Elton John singing it? But then maybe this is the version which is in the movie. And it looks like there's also lyrics by Tim Rice and produced by Hans Zimmer. What the heck? I think I'm used to another version.
There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen for this soundtrack. And you are absolutely right. Though this is the version we hear in the film, Elton John also recorded his own rendition. Should we take a listen?
Okay, that is a perfect song. The harmonies are amazing. It's a like early 90s, late 80s power rock ballad, which I think is really funny. And yet it's totally appropriate that Elton John should not be singing that at the opening of Lion King over the whole savannah, because his version, which I believe is what we hear on the radio and was a hit in itself, is totally decontextualized from the sort of instrumentation and geography of the savannah.
It's so Elton Johnified that it definitely wouldn't work in the movie, but as you correctly state, totally works as a pop song. I love that you commented on the harmonies here. I think it's so beautifully written. You know, Elton John's process is always that he's given a sheet of lyrics and then he sets those lyrics to music. Lion King soundtrack, no exception. The lyricist Tim Rice, in this case, supplied him with these lyrics. And according to Rice, Elton John basically took one afternoon to come up with this melody. And it's about the circle of life, the unchanging nature of life on Earth. These chords mimic that, right? They always come back to the same place through faith and love till we find our place on the path unwinding. And we kind of hear some unwinding in the chords themselves, especially right there.
Ooh.
But then it always comes back to the circle. The circle of life. There's such a beautiful marriage of harmony and lyric there.
And there's so many moments where the chords on top are changing while the bass underneath is staying. And so there's this tension of things moving forward while they also remain the same. They are in this larger circle.
Yeah. Totally.
I dig it.
It's so hard to pick just one other song from the Lion King soundtrack to talk about. But if I was going to pick one, it would probably have to be Hakuna Matata. Hakuna Matata, what a wonderful phrase. Hakuna Matata, ain't no passing craze.
It means no worries for the rest of your days. I mean, that is a bop for the ages, Charles. Yeah, it definitely is. It feels a little bit decontextualized, again, from the geography of the film. But I just realized, do you feel like it's paying homage to homage? Homage? Oh, God, it's happening again.
Oh, we're back. Tribute.
Homage in French, I think. Is it paying homage to The Jungle Book? Like, it has that sort of jazzy swing thing, like from The Jungle Book?
Whether it's referencing The Jungle Book or this is just the default mode for Disney musicals when they need kind of a fun comic relief number. I can't say, but I think what elevates this song, besides entering this phrase Hakuna Matata into like our collective vernacular, is that it pushes the plot forward in this really indelible way. Because something remarkable happens halfway through this song, right? So far, we've been listening to young Simba discover this new philosophy of, like, no worries.
It's a montage song. I forgot.
That's right. Then we get this instrumental interlude. Also, like, killer fretless bass.
Electric bass.
Yes,
Jaco Pastorius.
Elton John's longtime touring bass player Phil Spalding. Could do a whole separate episode on that, but instead, let's just listen to what happens. Something is coming.
A big reveal. It
means no worries. Wow, there he is. We just heard this young lion grow up in front of our ears. What an incredible musical moment.
And how does it do that? Like, I feel like so much happened in that little instrumental section.
We got these swelling strings, these ethereal harmonies that sort of conjure this idea of time passing. And then we hear the same melody with a new voice, the voice of grown-up Simba, Joseph Williams, the son of noted film composer John Williams.
No, for real?
For real. I did not know this until researching this episode, and that blew my mind. And then we've got Nathan Lane as Timon, the meerkat, Ernie Sabella's Pumbaa the warthog.
Does my young teenage brain serve me correctly that Simba was voiced by JTT?
No, it was Jason Weaver was the original one.
Wait,
that sounds like some crazy, like an urban myth or something. JTT, Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Wow, I haven't thought about him in a minute.
Dude, Google this. The Lion King, JTT voiced the speaking part of young Simba, not old Simba. I knew what I was talking about. Come on.
The speaking voice, and then Jason Weaver was the singing voice. All right, I stand corrected.
But who voices grown-up Simba?
No idea. It's a
practice. Matthew Broderick? What?
What? Dude,
this movie's crazy.
This movie's got it all, Charles. Okay, but here's the question. Here's the question. Yeah. How do you follow up this legacy, right? It's a tall order.
Right.
Now, we remade The Lion King once, but it was all the same songs. And we actually did an episode about this as well, because Beyonce came in and added some Afrobeat inspired songs that made it onto a separate soundtrack.
Right.
But here's Mufasa. This is a whole new movie. This is the origin story of Scar. How did he get his scar? No one asked ever. We're going to learn in Mufasa. We're going to meet young Mufasa, young Scar.
Okay.
And just like in the original Lion King, we have this kind of tone setting song, like the Circle of Life. This time it's called Milele. It's sung by Mufasa's parents, Afia and Masego, voiced by Anika Noni Rose and Keith David. And they're going to introduce this oasis, this land that they dream of called Milele, which they're all going to go to someday.
Okay, so a quick search points to Milele is Swahili for forever or always, constantly, eternity, which is more fitting than Zulu, frankly, because the Lion King Pride Rock is supposed to take place in East Africa, which is where we hear Swahili, as opposed to Zulu, which is spoken in South Africa. But also important to point out that Milele is also an auto dealer that exports tax-free vehicles to Africa, Asia, and Europe. What does this have to do with eternity?
In Lion King, we had the circle of life, you know, this eternal dance, the wheel of fortune, as Elton John would sing it. Here we have Milele, also this sort of eternal place. Is it real or fantasy? At the end of the film, spoiler alert, we will find out it is indeed real.
Ooh.
And I think it's a very kind of similar approach. The harmonies also always return to this home, this foreverness. And then we get this wonderful counterpoint between Mufasa's parents.
Life, the circle, great life is and not small. We know that there's enough for all. There is always more. Can
you feel? Very Lin-Manuel Miranda. It's very carefully plotted, these two voices interacting with one another. Mm-hmm. But it also sounds like very off the cuff and kind of spoken in this way that he's so adept at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely Lin's style.
And then we get to the climax of this piece. And man, Charlie, I was like, we're definitely going to get a modulation here. We don't, but we do get a really wonderful crescendo.
I did hear that really lovely background element of the chant from the Circle of Life. So they're kind of mashing these things up.
Exactly.
I don't get the modulation that I need, but you know what? I like the callback.
So we'll listen to one more song from Mufasa, but at this point, I mean, are you in step with the critics who have sort of dismissed these songs as lifeless and forgettable? We were kind of bopping along to Malele. I feel like this works pretty successfully as a intro track to this Mufasa universe.
Yeah, and I should say, I haven't seen the film yet, but I like it. I think it's doing something very different than The Circle of Life. The Circle of Life, especially when you listen to the Elton John power ballad version, you've got Elton John singing. He's a pop star. It really sort of does function effectively as a pop song. Lin-Manuel Miranda comes from Broadway, and I feel like this is much more a Broadway kind of song. You have characters talking to each other, establishing a narrative. I don't expect to hear this song on the Billboard. Of course, you know, whatever. Streaming can make any song go number one, a novelty, a Broadway song, but this is not a pop song. I think this is serving the narrative, and I think it's got some really nice build throughout, and I love the callback.
Just like Milele kind of maps to Circle of Life from the original, we have a song that roughly maps to Hakuna Matata as well. It's called I Always Wanted to Be a Brother, sung by young Scar and young Mufasa, voiced by Braylon Rankins and Theo Simolu.
I dig it.
You like it?
Yeah.
I don't like children singing in general. I don't also understand why they have British accents, but, you know, whatever.
Well, I mean, Kenya was a British colony, so maybe that's accurate. Yeah, the British voices is definitely a little funny to me, especially when there's local accents that could be used. It reminds me maybe more of like West African highlife music, though I actually can't say that I can speak to this style particularly well. But it also, it doesn't have the Hakuna Matata's unnecessary like swing era jazz thing. It does feel musically, again, more appropriate for the setting.
And then we get this kind of rock interlude.
I always wanted a brother. Oh, wait, what?
I always wanted a brother just like you. And I always wanted a brother. I always wanted a brother. I always wanted a brother.
You only got one shot.
It's so dramatic. It's great. And then check out what happens here, Charlie. Remember Hakuna Matata? We had this instrumental interlude, and then something changed. Here's our moment of transformation.
I always wanted a brother.
New voice.
I still remember my mother. One season after another.
One season after another.
Time is passing.
Sing for my brother, hey! Do anything for my brother, hey! Now be king with my
brother. And now they're grown up. Just like in Hakuna Matata, we hear these characters grow up. Now they're voiced by Aaron Pierre and Kelvin Harrison Jr. And it's the same sleight of hand where as we're listening, like years pass and the character blossoms and it still hits. I love it. What a great effect.
Yeah. I like this song. I think this demonstrates, again, Lin-Manuel coming from the world of Broadway. And he's particularly excellent at using the chorus, the extra actors, not the main actors, to add heightened tension. The shift between these moments of the full chorus singing together, raising the energy, moving into the future, and then all of a sudden the focus on this one voice. And he's so good at that, moving between these action movements where the scene is being reset and then calling attention to this pivotal plot point. Again, much more Broadway, I think, than pop song.
I think that's very astute, Charles. And that definitely seems to be something that separates the Mufasa soundtrack from the original Lion King soundtrack. I mean, as we heard, these songs like function pretty independently as these straight up pop bangers. But I feel like there's a larger issue, and I can't lay this at the feet of Lin-Manuel Miranda or anyone else. How do you follow up like one of the greatest animated musical films of all time? Who wants that job? That's an impossible task.
Yeah.
If this movie is being criticized for being lifeless and bland and kind of forgettable, I feel like it's no one's fault, but the very idea of like needing to rehash and wring out every bit of IP from these familiar franchises.
Yeah.
It's like maybe the issue is not the music itself. It's this very notion of we need to go back to this well and get even more out of it. And maybe there's nothing left to get.
Well, we also have seen that every prequel or sequel to an existing IP has to be the same film. Like Gladiator 2 is Gladiator 1. Right. Like A Force Awakens is just Star Wars. They have to do the same plot with minor changes, with new characters. And so you're asking people to both be nostalgic about the thing they loved before while somehow being excited that it's better than the original. It's an impossible task to live up to. And I don't see how this is a long-term winning strategy for Disney.
Well, we can approach this quandary through one other example, Charles, because here Lin-Manuel Miranda is faced with the unenviable task of following up Elton John and Tim Rice's original Lion King soundtrack. But Lin-Manuel has his own original soundtrack that has reached iconic status, and that's the film Moana. So what happens when someone else has to follow up Lin-Manuel Miranda, Moana 2, right when we're back?
As we enter the new year, I've been reflecting upon which dating royalty will return to the Love Island villa. Lovers from across the land will be hoping they get the call to be a Love Island all-star and share values of kindness, compassion, and snogging. I urge them to love thy neighbour on the next Sun Lounger and hope that come January 13th on ITV2 and ITVX, love will reign supreme.
It's a new year. Maybe you're taking a month off from drinking, you know, dry January, and maybe you're replacing it with something else.
Puff, puff, pass.
Something like 1 in 5 people who do dry January say they're smoking weed instead. And more Americans are now smoking weed daily than drinking daily. Current president is into it.
No one should be in jail merely for using or possessing marijuana, period.
Future president is into it.
I've had friends and I've had others and doctors telling me that it's been absolutely amazing, the medical marijuana.
Failed president and former prosecutor was down to clown.
People shouldn't have to go to jail for smoking weed.
Even health-conscious brainworm guy likes it.
My position on marijuana is that it should be federally legalized.
Everyone's getting down with pot, but legislatively, we're still stuck with a hot mess in the United States. Today Explained. Wherever you listen, come find us.
It's 2016. Lin-Manuel Miranda is riding high on the success of his musicals In the Heights and Hamilton. And he gets a new gig, Charlie.
Yeah.
Writing songs for an original Disney animated musical called Moana, the story of a young Polynesian girl, the daughter of the village chief, who has to recapture her people's love for the open ocean, corral the demigod Maui to save the world through the heart of Tefiti. You've seen it. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I've seen this one a lot. This is a major rerun in our household right now.
I don't know about you, but I feel like back when they announced this, I was like, this is a tough gig.
Oh, yeah.
To come in and do like a Disney soundtrack. Hats off to Lin-Manuel Miranda because he delivered.
Yeah.
Let's listen to the I Want song from Moana, How Far I'll Go.
I've been staring at the edge of the water long as I can remember, never really knowing why.
What a great opening.
Yeah.
The song is so effective, Charlie, because it's always building. Here's this character. Mm. She wants to explore, she wants to travel, and the melody is always like reaching up and then falling back down.
Ooh.
Goes up, falls down. And then we get to the pre-chorus.
Every turn I take, every trail I track, every path I make, every road leads
building.
Back to the place I know where I cannot
building.
Go, where I long.
Oh, falls back down.
Same deal, right? And then it goes up. And then we fall down on your favorite chord of all time, the minor four.
Yeah.
So throughout this verse and pre-chorus, we have the same thing. Melody goes up, it falls down. Melody goes up, it falls down. What about the chorus, Charles?
See the line with the sky meets the sea.
She finally made it. She's up in the highest register of her voice. It's almost like you can picture her out on the open ocean. We started down here. And by the chorus, we're up here. It's like she finally got there. What a satisfying payoff.
I feel like there's something missing from your analysis, Nate. It goes even deeper than this. Like the whole song, she's running around saying like, this is the island I'm from, this island, this island, this island. She keeps talking. She says the word island like 1,000 times in this song.
I know everybody on this island seems so happy on this island. Everything is by design. I know everybody on this island has a role on this island.
Doesn't the word island start to feel claustrophobic, like being stuck on an island? We're like, whoa, oh, it's so nice we're all on this island. But like, I could use some time off this island, on this island, off this island. And she is kind of like in the film running around, looking out to the ocean, constantly wanting to make it out there. And then, of course, towards the end of the song, she finally makes it. And I remember seeing, gosh, back in 2022, a great music theory analysis of the song by Brett Bowles. And he has this whole analysis about how this song is about her wanting to reach the sea, right? The chorus line is, see the line where the sky meets the sea. She's trying to reach the sea. And embedded in the song is also the aspiration to reach the chord C. Brett Bowles shows us that the song, which is in E major, which doesn't have a C naturally in it, has a C sharp, right?
There's E, there's C. So very distant, literally.
Right. Except in that moment when you play that minor four chord, there is a C.
Where I long to be.
Where I long to be. And that minor four chord is that like longing chord, that chord that you hear in all the Beatles songs. It's like, oh, and I really wish I could have her.
Yeah.
Oh, I really wish I could get back with her. That is her feeling yearning for the sea. Then Brett Bowles shows at the end of the song, there's this series of modulations where we actually finally arrive on the chord C.
The line where the sky meets the sea, it calls me, it calls me. All right, so now the C fits into this key, but it gets so much better. At the very end, she sings, one day I'll know how far I'll go. And then we get the C again with this new harmony. And what happens then? Then the harmony shifts underneath while she's holding that C. And we change keys.
Oh! It's so rewarding. Like, Lin-Manuel Miranda is just like giving us gold here.
Okay, that's hip. I love it.
I'm not sure that it's hip, but it's cool.
You know what else I'm realizing, Charles?
What's that?
This is a pop song. Like you were talking about Mufasa, Milele, I've Always Wanted a Brother. Those were more musical theater songs, dramatic, you know, recitative, talking. This is like verse, pre-chorus, chorus, verse, pre-chorus, chorus, modulation. It's just a straight up pop power ballad.
Yeah.
And perhaps that's why it like sort of penetrated into our collective psyche so strongly, and why Alessia Cara was able to do a pop version of it, just like Elton John did with Circle of Life.
That's the play.
And then if we're talking Moana, we have to talk Dwayne The Rock Johnson as the demigod Maui singing You're Welcome.
What can I say except you're welcome for the tides, the sun, the sky? Hey, it's okay, it's okay, you're welcome.
I think we all remember where we were when we heard The Rock sing for the first time. I mean, what a revelation.
From Wrestling Federation to Broadway style Disney musical, I did not have that one on my bingo card.
But to me, I think the highlight of the song is the rap breakdown.
Kid, honestly, I could go on and on. I could explain every natural phenomenon. The tide, the grass, the ground. Oh, that was Maui just messing around. I killed an eel, I buried its guts. Sprouted a tree, now you got coconuts.
Lin-Manuel's like, come on, I just did Hamilton. You got to give me a rap verse.
Well, come to think of it, I mean, it's so well done.
And I feel like he got a lot of flack for some of the performance here. The Rock is not a singer. I think that he is singing with a lot of gusto. I think it's convincing. It is not Broadway's quality singing or hip-hop's quality rapping. But there's something about this sort of demigod who's got maybe an unearned amount of confidence. And I think he's singing from that same kind of place. And that, yeah, a little bit of vocal tuning might be helping him out. But whatever, he's a god. So I let it fly. I actually think this is a very successful song.
I agree. This is really successful. And part of that might be that they're actually following a similar formula to The Lion King. The music director of The Lion King, Mark Mancina, is back for Moana. And just like Elton John and Tim Rice collaborated with this South African singer, Lebo M, Lin-Manuel Miranda collaborates with the Polynesian singer Opetaia Fowai to incorporate traditional authentic sounds into this soundtrack. But Charles, we have a problem. How do you follow up the success of this film? Because 2024 sees the release, the long-awaited release of Moana 2. It also gets pretty negative reviews and nevertheless is one of the top five grossing films of 2024. The soundtrack this time is by the duo Barlow and Bear, Abigail Barlow and Emily Bear, who came to renown by penning the unauthorized Bridgerton musical, which debuted on TikTok.
On TikTok. I remember that. Good for them.
And now we've got kind of a role reversal, right? Mufasa found Lin-Manuel trying to match Elton John. Now Barlow and Bear are trying to match Lin-Manuel. What do you do in this situation? Well, first, you need a song that's kind of like How Far We'll Go. And in Moana 2, that song is Beyond. It's sung once again by the star of Moana, Auli'i Krivalio, and it has the same yearning power.
What lies beyond, under skies I've never seen? Will I lose myself between my home and what's unknown if I go beyond?
Let me ask the same question I asked about Mufasa. Is the negativity warranted? How are you feeling about this song?
I actually think this is a neat song. I haven't heard it yet. This is my first time. I haven't seen Moana 2.
It's kind of the same plot. She needs to go back out on the ocean and save the village.
Okay. I like the idea of we're not just trying to go out to the sea. We're going beyond, deeper into the ocean. And there's this nice little melody when she sings about going beyond. There is this sort of melodic, crunchy, dissonant thing that happens, and I really like it.
I go beyond.
I feel like there's a little bit of modal mixture there.
Whoa, yeah. We go from F major to D major. Super crunchy.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of like what Ariana Grande does in Imperfect for You. That great moment where she sings a note which doesn't really belong in the key. And it works because there's this imperfection in her relationship and she's getting over the need to be perfect in a relationship. But Beyond.
Yeah.
Doing the same thing where there's a note when she sings the word beyond, she's reaching outside the scale that she's supposed to be singing in.
Thinking of that analysis by Brett Bowles that you played, it's kind of similar. It uses chromatic harmony to give you the sense of something unknown, something distant, something that you're reaching towards. So that's a cool connection to the original soundtrack.
Yeah, and not everything in this world is text painting. I get it, but like that is a really deliberate, chosen moment to sing beyond at that moment when the harmonies are a little bit off, and it's working for me. I like that.
Our last song under consideration is the counterpart to You're Welcome, another Dwayne the Rock Johnson feature. This one's called Can I Get a Chihu, which is kind of Maui's catchphrase from the original Moana. Chihu!
Oh, yeah.
Not ringing a bell for Charlie, but that's okay. Maybe you'll recognize it after you hear this track.
Can I get a chihu? Who are you? Who are you? Who are you gonna be? You're gonna make some history. Come on, Moana, go get your destiny.
This sounds like if Flo Rida wrote a kid's song.
You've gotta.
How are we feeling about Kamana Moana?
I do recall that our colleagues at Vulture wrote an article that says we owe Lin-Manuel Miranda an apology because I think originally our publication wasn't so kind to that film and thought, you know, why are you doing a Disney thing, Lin? And now realized, oh, well, that music slapped and now maybe, I don't know, rhymes like Kamana Moana. I don't know. It's fine. I actually think Lin would make that same rhyme.
It's fine. We're at the end of our conversation, Charlie. Not the end of, you know, these soundtracks. We've only picked two songs from each of them.
Yeah.
But we're at the end of our conversation, and I feel like we've arrived in a similar place. Whatever negative feedback these composers, these directors are getting, perhaps some of it warranted, but ultimately, I feel like this is an issue with the idea of the franchise itself.
Yeah.
The idea of revisiting this IP over and over again, it stifles creativity.
Yep.
Like, why was the Lion King great? Why was the original Moana great? Because they were new, because they were surprising, because they took these ideas and these characters and they introduced them with sounds that you'd never heard before. And it was like truly like an epiphany to see it and hear it. And it burned itself in your brain forever. And Mufasa, Moana 2, these are just riding the coattails. And again, what an impossible task to come in and be like, okay, I'm going to honor the original. I'm going to continue this story. I'm going to keep it familiar. I'm going to try and put a little bit of my own spin on it, but not make it too different. That's not how you're to be creative.
No.
That's just a recipe for creating what the critics are going to call lifeless, forgettable. But it's not their fault. I really firmly believe that. I think these composers all did as good a job they can. I lay this on the feet of our IP-crazed modern culture. How about that, Charles?
I dig it. You know, I'm avoiding watching Disney films that I don't have to watch because I know I will be watching all of them 10,000 times with my children once they're ready, which explains why I have not seen these two yet. But when I do, I think I'm just going to close my eyes and enjoy the music a bit more because if these sequels aren't delivering on the narrative, I actually think there were some really great songs here. I've got no problem with them.
I agree, Charlie. I actually think we have to go beyond.
I'll be there with you. Switch on Pop is produced by Rihanna Cruz, edited by Art Chung, engineered by Bran McFarlane, illustrations by Aris Gottlieb. We're a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network, production of Vulture, which is part of New York Magazine. Subscribe at nymag.com/pod.
You can find more episodes of our show anywhere you get podcasts. You can check out our website, www.switchedonpop.com. And there you can find a little box where you put in your email address, sign up for our newsletter. We're going to blast you once a week with a deeper dive into the episode that we release. And we also want to hear from you. So talk to us at Switched on Pop. What did you want to hear from Moana 2 and Mufasa? Or, you know, what did you love about The Lion King if you're revisiting that or the original Moana? Talk to us.
We'll be back again next week with our 400th episode. And something very special, we're going to be rewriting to us what is one of the most important pieces of music of all time.
Ooh.
Until then, thanks for listening.